Well, hi, friends, and welcome back to Sermon Smith. As you know, Sermon Smith is a podcast of conversations about the craft of sermon preparation. Wanted to share one or two things with you before we get into it. We have a new partnership with Logos Bible Software. We've had quite a few guests who have mentioned that they love Logos Bible Software, and I use it myself. I love it. So if you've been interested in Logos and you want to give it a try, we can offer 15% off a base package. And if you purchase it through our link, then some of your purchase will go back to support the show. You can go to logos.com/sermonsmith to look that over and make sure that we get the credit and you get your discount. We also have some links rotating through some sponsorship and partnership opportunities in the header of the site at sermonsmith.com. And also, as always, I'm thankful if you're willing to tweet about shows, post to Facebook, maybe write blog posts, and of course, reviews on iTunes are always helpful as well. So thanks so much for listening, and let's get into this week's episode with TJ Luoma. I'm kind of excited and a little nervous about my guest today. His name is TJ Luoma. How are you doing, TJ?
I'm doing great, thank you.
How'd I do in that pronunciation?
Just fine.
Rhymes with diploma.
Rhymes with diploma. That's your key.
And the reason I say I'm both excited and nervous is I have a sense that this could get really, really, really geeky. and so I will introduce you as to why I invited you to do this. TJ, I listened to a podcast called Mac Power Users, which is actually a podcast I've been on before talking about website stuff. And TJ was a guest on there talking about his workflows, and turns out I'm listening to it, and here's this guy who's this pastor who's really nerdy and prepares sermons, and I thought, I need to get him on Sermon Smith. So here we are only a few short weeks later, and here you are.
Through the magic of the internet.
The magic of the internet. You weren't too hard to track down.
No, that's the good and the bad thing about a name like Luoma. Although it's fairly common in Finland, which is where I come from. It's not quite Smith, but it's close.
I didn't search in Finland, though.
Yes,
so TJ, you know what? You sound great. So let's give you a little bit of chance to talk about the reason that you sound great. I'm sure it's because of your dulcet tones, but also because you've got a podcast microphone because you do a little podcasting of your own. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you're doing there?
Sure. Yes. As a matter of fact, I'm on my second microphone. You know, it's a big thing. You spend money on getting the first one, and then, you know, you realize that if you'd spent maybe a little more money, you could have got a better one. I've got a Blue Yeti, I think is what it's called. Although it's not blue at all.
It's not at all.
Liars. And yes, I do a podcast called Impolite Company, which is a great name that I didn't come up with. My co-host Lindsay came up with it, and we talk about religion and politics, and which of course are things you don't talk about in polite company. So, you know, the name was just, you know, Lindsay's the creative part on this thing. But of course I am a minister. I'm a Presbyterian minister. Lindsay is not. Lindsay is actually a cheesemonger. She works in artisanal, like Merlin Mann says it, you know, artisanal. In Chicago. But she and I met online, and we had some conversations about the stuff, and she was curious to talk about some of these things with somebody who was interested in talking about them without any real interest in converting someone.
Huh.
And so that's what we ended up doing. And finally she said, we should make this a podcast. And so it went.
Yeah. And that's, how far in are you on that? It's fairly new.
Well, we've been doing it for about a year, but we started out trying to do it like twice a month, but again, this isn't Lindsay's day job, and it's, you know, like third or fourth on mine, so we've had some scheduling things. So I think we're only up to about episode 18 or 20 or so.
Yeah, I think I will say I subscribed to that after hearing you talk about it on the Mac Power Users podcast, and I don't think there's been any episodes come through my podcast for it. Has there been one since then?
No, there hasn't.
Okay.
Yeah, we are.
I was feeling bad that maybe I accidentally deleted it, but I didn't think I had.
No.
So, all right. Well, talk a little bit about the church setting where you are. What's the congregation look like? What part of the country?
I am in rural Ohio. We are 2 hours south of Columbus. And when somebody asks me what the nearest big city is, I say we're 2 hours south of Columbus.
Yeah.
Or we're an hour north of Huntington, West Virginia. It's a very pretty little town right on the Ohio-West Virginia border. I can actually just about to see the Ohio River from the church. Church just entered its 199th year. It'll be 200 in 2015. I've been here not quite that long. I've been here since 2003. It's a wonderful congregation. We've got, I don't know how many. I think they're probably 150 or 200 on the book, so to speak. It's just a great congregation. We've had been through a lot together. My wife and I moved here when our son was a year old, and so he's grown up here, and this has really been the only home he's ever known. It's a, like I said, a rural setting. A lot of my folks are not tech savvy. I would say most of my folks, if they're on anything, I've got a lot of folks who don't even do email, but it's been amazing to see how many people have gotten on Facebook, because that's where the pictures of the grandchildren go.
Yeah.
And so if they want to see those, they've got to get on Facebook, even if they don't do anything with it. So.
Yeah, I remember you're just talking about even at your house, you don't have any access to any broadband.
Yeah, I've got satellite internet, which people who follow me on Twitter and things are used to hearing me constantly complain about. But it's pretty terrible, and it's expensive, but it's the only option we've got. On the other hand, you know, and I don't usually get... Or usually, you know, I'll leave that there for people to feel badly, but, you know, and have sympathy for me. But what I don't usually tell them is we've got a nice little house on a lake, and we've got an acre and a half for, like, for far less than most people I know are paying for, you know,
I'm sure,
a terrible apartment somewhere. We've got, and we live on a road that's a circle, so we don't get much traffic. We've got three dogs who can, you know, just sort of roam the hills. And so, you know, it's very, very pretty. I love where we live. It's just, you know, I'm about a mile away from the end of the cable run, and a couple of years ago they were upgrading DSL lines around, but they stopped before they got to our neighborhood. So, nah, that's what it is.
Well, I live in the heart of Austin, Texas, and, you know, Austin being tech capital and all that, but even the DSL in my neighborhood, they can't get me past which I shouldn't say this to you.
I know you shouldn't.
but they can't get me up to 18 megabits. Past 18 megabits down, even though some of their service, well, now they're rolling out gigapower here. We won't talk about that, but
yeah.
So even in the heart of the city, that's, it's pretty erratic. So, well, that's a beautiful thing. You're breaking all of the stereotypes of what a super nerdy, geeky, power using preacher, you know, what your location would be, but we're going to roll with it. So coming from a Presbyterian church, I would imagine, do you use lectionary every Sunday? Or do you plan different sermon series? What does that look like?
I have been using the lectionary for a number of years, and I did that largely because I wasn't sure I wanted to. I worked with a senior pastor once who said that the lectionary frees the congregation from the tyranny of the preacher's favorite passages.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I knew another pastor in Florida who'd been in his congregation for about a year and had only preached on the Gospel of John. And just after his year anniversary, somebody broke into the church, and one of the things they stole was his laptop. And he told the congregation that all of his sermons were on there, and so he was going to have to start over.
At John chapter 1.
Yeah, which I don't think he did, because they did like him. But I have started looking at the narrative lectionary, which is kind of new and fun. And, you know, it's one of these things where, you know, I'm you know, pastors, I'm already starting to look past Easter, which hasn't happened yet. But it's sort of like once we get into that, you know, that time between Pentecost and, you know, really,
ordinary time.
Yeah, ordinary time. Once we get into ordinary time, you know, it's a little easier to maybe do some different things. Of course, I was doing this and thinking about this, and all of a sudden I get an email from our choir director, and she's picked up music through, like, July, I think, based on the lectionary.
Oh, well, there you go.
And I was like, okay, so I guess I need to be a little bit further ahead of her.
I've not heard of the narrative lectionary.
I can't remember where I heard it from, and I'm terrible at thinking of these things on the spot, but... if you just put a narrative lectionary on the, I think they're using a 4-year cycle, and I think they may have, may just be coming up on like the end of their first cycle. So it's something I had only recently heard about. I think I actually saw it on techsweek.com.
Yeah.
They had links to it, and so I started checking it out. And actually, somebody I know from when I was in seminary, who's one of my teaching assistants, who's now a professor in Lutheran seminary, and I can't remember if It's called Lutheran Seminary. I'm very sorry. Hi, Rolf, if you're listening.
Okay. So then with that in mind, let's just talk through the process that you go through as you put a sermon together. How far in advance do you start? You know, I'll even ask a broader question. As you're approaching a Sunday, do you tend to be one who takes one lectionary text each week and sits with it? Or do you try to incorporate multiple texts out of the lectionary each week? And how do you decide that? And then what's the process look like from there? There's like seven questions I just asked you.
Well, I'll probably answer three of them and four that you didn't ask.
All right. I
do one, and for that's a fairly recent change as well. For a while in my previous congregation, we had like three readings every Sunday, and the senior pastor was especially good at trying to at least touch on all three of them. When I came here, originally we were doing two readings, and I tried again to tie them together. And again, a couple of years ago, for no good reason other than, as I'd like to say, it seemed good to me and possibly the Holy Spirit.
Maybe. That
I thought, I think I'd like to be able to read some longer passages of whatever the reading is. Because the thing that frustrates me about the lectionary, every time I come to a lectionary reading that begins with the word therefore, because, or I'm like, we who are putting the sermons together may remember what last week's text was, maybe, but does the congregation? So really I've started focusing mainly on the gospel text that's what I usually read. Sometimes I vary that, and I've usually, read the others, and if there's something that, seems to connect, I might refer to it. Or something like that, but I usually have been trying to focus on one reading. And one of the things I've done is, like, the first time when I started this, I would focus on the gospel reading, and then next lectionary cycle, this is a nice thing about being somewhere for a while, I tried to do more on the epistle readings, which, I think a lot of times end up getting less attention when you're trying to focus on more than one. Or unless you're a fan of Paul, in which case they probably get all the attention. But so I've tried a couple of different things. Like I said, I don't know that I've come up with a great system yet. But I do like the fact that the lectionary does force me to deal with texts that I think I have I'm so familiar with that I wonder if there's anything new in there. And of course, there always is.
Sure.
The the blessing and the curse of it is that after you've gotten past the easy parts of what you preach on them, I was ordained in 98. Of course, I was only preaching about once a month at my previous church, but I've been here for 10, 11 years now. So I've cycled through the lectionary a couple of times. Well, now it starts to push you a little further because, the congregation may not remember what you preached on 3 years ago, but if you do and you want to preach on something different, you've got to get beyond the stuff that is really easily comes to mind when you're thinking about it.
I know how that goes. And that's the fun part, and that's also it's rolling up your sleeves and getting down to it.
Right.
So when does that – so for a given Sunday –
sure.
When will you first look at the text for that? Will it be on Monday, or do you tend to work a few at a time?
Well, I usually try to get, and again, this goes back to, helping our our music choir director. I usually try to, at least look ahead to, they know, again, that I usually use the gospel text, but I usually will, try to get a little bit ahead and at least look through and see if there are any things that I'm going to, if they're coming up on a theme or something like that, if I'm going to do that or if I'm not going to, like if the lectionary is going to do 5 or 6, weeks on a particular theme or topic that I don't want to, then I'm going to figure out what else to do. And then once I've got that list in place, I usually just leave it alone. And usually Sunday after church, I try to do nothing church related.
Like the rest of us, you just go home and cry for a little while.
it's amazing how easily sleep comes Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
And my family will hang out, whatever. And then Monday is when I start to look for articles. I'm not really reading anything yet. I'm just sort of looking for them, and sort of throwing picking everything I can find and throwing it into a folder. And then as the week goes on, trying to read through that, and, you know, usually by about Wednesday or Thursday, I think I've got some idea of where it's going. Friday, one of the few strokes of brilliance I think I had a few years ago, they were looking to make some changes in the office, and they had two part-time people who would answer phones, and one of them moved away, and they decided to go to one, and they're trying to figure out what to do with our hours because it was going to be all moved around. And I said, you know, why don't we just, you know, she works on Sunday, because she does. You know, people are always coming up to the church secretary on Sunday asking her for stuff. Yeah. And I said, and I work on Sunday, so why don't we close the church office on Friday every week? And they went for it, which kind of surprised me, but they did. And the great thing about it is that my son happens to go to his school is just around the corner from the church. So I bring him in, and on Fridays, no one expects me to answer the phone, and nobody comes to the church office because it's closed.
Yeah.
And so that's when I get the bulk of my preparation stuff done.
Are you sure you want to say this in public?
Well, see, I know that most of my people are not nearly nerdy enough to find this out and listen to this on a podcast. But
fair enough.
I know a lot of pastors who take Mondays off, and to me that's never made sense because Monday to me is always, you know, there's just 1,000 little things to do.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I could ever get my brain out of starting to think about stuff on Monday anyway. But by Friday, I feel like that Friday time works really well.
All right. So let's backtrack to Monday.
Sure.
And kind of settle in on that.
Okay.
You know, 'cause you said you just started collecting articles. I assume at some point you're sitting down with the text, so at least you know a general direction and a theme that's going to come out of those articles. Or have you already even outlined those themes in that prior document you discussed?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, when I'm looking through there, I pick the scripture reference. I try to come up with a sermon title, which I really wish I could just put sermon title. Yeah. The word sermon title in the bulletin every week, but
tell me about it.
And then I try to give like a line or two of what the theme's going to be, again, for the choir director and also the woman who does our children lessons. She looks at that too, and she tries to do something with it, with the children's sermons and things like that. So I've got an idea of what the theme's going to be from, you know, whatever that was. You know, it could have been last week, it could have been a month ago, depending on how long ago. I usually try to get about 3 months, I guess, at a time on that little document there. So I've got some idea, but, you know, it's interesting. When I was in seminary, they talked about, you know, the importance of, you know, sort of doing your own work and, you know, putting your own study in before you go to any of the commentaries.
Yeah.
And that's good advice, definitely. But I think the other danger is, especially, again, after we've been doing it for a while, is that we can, again, come back to the same ideas and the same points of things we've had. And so one of the things I've been enjoying lately is trying to, again, look for, especially look for articles on the, either that have been linked up from textweek.com or from the Atlas serials.
You're talking journal articles.
And, yes.
Yeah. Theological journals.
Theological journal articles. And really it's, but they've got a wide range there. I mean, you know, you've got very, very dense academic, you know, journals written in, you know, German. And then you've got, you know, Christianity Today, Christian Century type, you know, you've got a range there on articles. But, you know, I generally put the theme in, the scripture reference in, and then, you know, just start wading through things. And they've got the abstracts there. You can sort of get a feel for it. And almost every week, there are two or three articles that just sort of jump out at me because there's something there that didn't occur to me when I was thinking about the passage. And so those tend to be the first couple that I read and see if that takes me in a different direction than maybe I was expecting to go. This past week, I was actually a week off on the lectionary. So this past week I preached on the woman at the well and, you know, found a great article that, you know, talked about the fact that, you know, preachers have been really unkind to this woman, you know, accused her of all sorts of things. You know, Jesus never calls her to repentance, you know, any of these things, but, you know, instead has a great theological conversation, with her. And, so, you know, again, that article just sort of jumped out at me. And I think, although I also saw myself as, you know, previously having been guilty of some of the things that he was upset at preachers for doing, it was, you know, an opportunity to see it in a new way.
Yeah. So you tend to go to journal articles even before you hit commentaries.
Yes, and I'll tell you that one of the reasons for this is that it's easier. And by that I mean I've got tons of books on my shelf. I've got great software packages on my computer, but I'm more familiar with those than I am the journal articles. And so I feel like I'm more likely to stumble across something I hadn't expected with the journal articles. Because, again, there's a pretty wide range there of topics.
So you said you grab those and you download them to a folder. I'm going to start getting nerdy.
Okay. Well, I don't actually do that. What I do is I email.
Right.
What I do is I email them to myself using a macro that I wrote in Keyboard Maestro.
And we've just lost everyone.
Yeah. So at any rate, on these, I talked about this a bit on the Mac Power users, but here's the slightly less nerdy version of this. When you go into one of these databases, there's almost always a link there for you to, you know, pull up the PDF, and then you can read the PDF. Well, again, reading on a computer screen, you know, these journal articles, not as great. So, and then, you know, you get into the thing, and, you know, if you're reading a PDF inside of a browser, which isn't great. And so what I do is when I find one of these things that I want to do, instead of going through the steps to, you know, right-click, save as, choose a folder that it's supposed to go into, there's almost always a link on there where you can say, you know, email this to somebody. Well, I email it to myself, but I've used this very cool service called sendtodropbox.com.
Yeah.
And you can send yourself an email message with an attachment there, and it will take the attachment out and save it into a folder in your Dropbox. So, and you can do that. You can set it up online on their website really easily, so that, you know, it'll automatically like sort itself by date. Well, this is great because if I'm, you know, sitting here on, you know, let's say April, you know, 2nd, and I email myself a bunch of files, those files are going to end up in a folder dated, you know, won't have the topic name, but every one of those files in there is going to be on the related topic. So it's sort of doing that for me, which I like. And when I email it from that Atlas Serial site, it also has the body of the message is all the citation information, and then it gives you the attachment. And Send to Dropbox saves both of those, one as a text file and one as a PDF. So, you know, if I do end up wanting to, you know, cite it or be able to find it later or anything like that, I've got all that information right there for me.
And so how do you review those PDFs? You said you don't like to look at them on your screen.
No, of course not. So I've got my iPad. I've got an iPad 3, which I love, and it will not die, which I'm grateful for, but I'd really like to get an iPad Air.
Yeah, the newer ones make you want it to die. Dropped it. Oops.
Yeah. No, I actually did. I actually broke my screen. It was less than a month old, and I slipped coming out of the church and dropped it in the prayer garden. And you'd be amazed how many non-prayerful things come to your mind when you see your iPad land face down on the beautiful brick that they have placed around the prayer garden.
Yeah.
So yes. But yes, that's been replaced. But so I love my full-size iPad. My wife has an iPad mini she loves, but I like my full-size one because I can easily read PDFs on it. And I've got a PDF app on there. You know, there are dozens of these things. I think one's called PDF Expert.
That's my favorite.
Is that the one that just turned 5? Version numbers, whatever. But it's got a thing where it will sync to either your local your computer, or it can sync directly to Dropbox. It's a lot faster to sync to my computer. So the same folder that Send to Dropbox saves to on my computer is the folder that PDF Expert syncs to. So before I leave the church, I open up my iPad, I tell it to sync, and it syncs all of these articles. And then I can do, I've got a couple of iPad, I have two or three styluses. That I use because it's really the best thing for marking up PDFs and things like that. And that's really cool. I really wish I had done a better job of this starting earlier because, you know, it's so much easier to find and search these things when they're on your computer than when they're, you know, marginalia and written in actual books. So that's the process there. And usually, you know, and the great thing about this is, you know, I can, there's a restaurant just down the street from the church that I go to so often that when I sit down, they bring me my drink without me telling them what I want. And, you know, I bring my iPad over and I'm sitting there reading journal articles in the middle of this, you know, sports bar thing place. And usually, you know, you can get a couple of pages into a journal article and tell whether or not it's something you want to read. Some of these are just a couple of pages. And I can delete them there, and when it syncs back, it'll delete them on my Mac or any of the notations. The other great thing about this is if I can, my handwriting's awful. I think if you don't have if your handwriting's too bad, so bad that you can't become a doctor, then you can become a pastor.
Is that what it is?
Yes. Yeah.
I've wondered.
I think that's what it is. And so, but when I'm on the iPad, I can type my little notes in there and they come up as PDF annotations and, you know, they come back in preview and stuff like that. So that's been my system for reading stuff like that. And I think that's why I will stick with the larger iPad.
What stylus do you use, just out of curiosity?
Which
is your favorite?
The first one I got was the Cosmonaut, which is too big.
It's like a fat crayon.
Yeah, exactly. And then I've got another one that's much thinner, but it's like the generic one that's all of them, but it's bamboo.
Is that what it makes?
And it's a much thinner, you know, type of thing. I was really, really bummed, actually. I bought a really fine tipped one, but it only works in penultimate.
Oh.
And I didn't realize that's a, you know, it's one of these things where the app would have to add support for the stylus.
Yeah,
in there.
Yeah.
So at any rate. So well, yeah,
bamboo is one of the cheaper ones.
Yeah,
it works pretty well.
Yeah, the bamboo one I think was like $20-$30, and it looks very much like many of the ones you can get at like Best Buy or whatever like that. You just see them hanging there. So
yeah, okay.
The key for me is I don't want it to be heartbroken if I lose it.
So as you're making notes and highlighting, you know, like you said, PDF Expert will save those, so you've got that text easily capturable. So what's the next step? So what are you going to do with all that?
Well, when I go back, when I finally do get to the computer, I'm going to start an outline, which, you know, I've got Omni Outliner, I've got all these different things. 99 times I start an outline in a text document, and it's, you know, It's a dash and a tab and text and a dash, you know, and if I need to indent or anything like that, just because it's quick and easy.
Yeah.
Then I'll go in, I'll start looking at, you know, the journal articles usually have started to, you know, push me in a direction. So I've usually got then some questions about, okay, well, this journal article is making a big deal about this word. You know, is this a like real possible variant translation, or is this somebody's, you know, hobby horse that they just happen to be on?
Not that would happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, not that that's ever.
You know, certainly not in a sermon, let alone a journal article.
the worst thing is when you realize that, you know, like the Tuesday after you've preached the sermon, you're like, oh wait, no, that wasn't really a good translation of that word. And yeah, so. But usually that's given me some sort of an idea to go with, and that's where I usually find the tools in either Cordant or Logos to do things like word searches. I really enjoyed Greek and Hebrew. I was not very good at them.
Yeah,
I found the conversation to be fascinating, and you know, listening to people who really know their stuff talk about the stuff is great. But when you sat me down in front of the stuff, I had real troubles. So you know, being able to do stuff like what does Logos call it? I think it's the Bible word lookup or something. You right click on it and you can choose this
right
thing, and it gives you just a ridiculously awesome amount of information all about this word.
But you mentioned accordance. Do you go back and forth between the two?
I do. And this is it's sort of embarrassing to have this be the quote unquote problem. Is that in my role as reviewing software, I get review copies of both of these programs.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, when I first started, I really liked Accordance. And so I was buying packages over there, and then I got to know Accordance, and Accordance got a lot better in the last couple of years. And so, you know, and they've had some really good sales. So I've got some stuff in there, and I go back and forth between the two of them. And I really wish that I was great at one of them, because they're both great programs. So there's no question about it. It's just, you know, but at a certain point, you get, you know, the one that you know better is the one that's better for you. Well, I don't know either of them enough to consider myself, you know, an expert at it. But for example, the when I'm reading text, when I'm doing text comparisons, I love the stuff that Accordance has on there, and Accordance makes it really easy to do, you know, Greek and Hebrew, you know, finding roots and other things like that. Logos has some great stuff too. I just happen to like Accordance's a little better. I've got a ton of books in my Logos library that came in, you know, one of the packages that I bought. That ended up being more clutter than anything else. I really wish there was, you can hide some of them and things like that, but
yeah, I hide a bunch.
It's just kind of janky. So, and the biggest frustration with Logos is that every time I launch Logos, it tells me that it has to reindex itself. And even on my new computer with an SSD and a lot of RAM and everything, it just seemed like a really slow process. That seems to be getting better, and I'm hoping that it'll continue to do so. But yeah,
I have a big library.
Yeah, I do. I do. Yeah. And well, in the computer I'm on now is actually a when I'm at my office is a Mac Mini, and it's got a spinning disk instead of an SSD. So that's part of the problem is, you know, I've. It's got a 1 terabyte drive, which is awesome because I'm used to like a 256 gigabyte, but you know, it's a spinning disk instead of an SSD. And it's sort of like living with a dishwasher. You know, it's fine to not have a house or an apartment with a dishwasher if you've never had one, but once you have one, it's hard to go back.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same way with the SSD. It's sort of one of these things, but the, again, both of those packages take up a lot of space. So
yeah, they do. I have a 64 gig MacBook Air.
Oh, wow.
And let me just tell you that Logos is the primary culprit. And that's part of why I hide a lot of books in my library, just to streamline that. So, okay. So you start going a direction. You spend time with Logos or Accordance, just depending what your mood is that day, what you had for lunch maybe. but partially because different comfort levels with each.
Yes.
What happens in that time? I mean, is that mostly word study? Are you diving into commentaries at this point through one of those, or are you going back to bookshelves for commentaries?
No, I bet if you took a picture of my bookshelves a year ago and then took a picture of them today, I bet they'd look largely the same. Because I do. I mean, it's just so easy to find stuff in these packages than it is. You know, I've got a. The Ancient Christian Commentary series started right when I was coming out of seminary. I got it like a, you know, I think I signed up for that before it was actually the first issue came out, and I've gotten one faithfully, you know, every couple of months until I've got the whole series now. But I've also got it. It was again in one of the packages on, I think it's on Logos. And, you know, it's just so much easier because instead of having to figure out, you know, which one will have, especially if you're doing topical something, you know, which one is going to have a discussion about this topic. It's just so much easier to be able to, you know, fly through the search in one of the software packages. So that at that point I am going, I'm looking, you know, I've got some idea of, you know, what I think the sermon is going to be about, and then just start looking for other, you know, other occurrences of words and other places that it's used. You know, since I've been preaching gospels, you know, what are, and I find that I think this is a little embarrassing, but I still find it a little difficult sometimes. I'm like, now, wait a minute. I know this story, but there's more details and, you know, and so it's like, okay, so I don't want to end up telling, you know, sort of the Reader's Digest condensed version of the story. It's sort of like, you know, which one are we actually dealing with? But I think it's important to, you know, talk about, you know, well, sure, Mark mentioned this part, and Matthew mentioned this part of it, and, you know, and then Luke talked about something here, and then, you know, John was off staring at butterflies or whatever he was doing. So, you know, it's amazing. The problem isn't finding ideas. The problem is figuring out which one to go with.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, that's
now more than ever.
Yeah, exactly, right? Because you can, you know, just... You could, you know, pick something on Saturday afternoon and have, you know, 1,000 resources at your fingertips, you know, in an hour type of thing. So
let me start to put a timeline to all of this.
Okay.
Monday, you're doing this journal stuff.
Yes.
You know, and you're going to sit in the sports bar. I assume that's all still on Monday and reading and highlighting.
Yep.
And then when you get back to your office, maybe later on Monday or on Tuesday, you're syncing back some of these notes from journals and starting to outline? Would that be Tuesday, or are we still on Monday?
No. Yeah, we're ideally we're on Tuesday.
Okay.
You know, again, this is the idealized version of how I would like things to go most weeks. You know, I get bits and pieces of this most weeks, but yeah. So then on Tuesday, I'm you know, sort of Tuesday. Honestly, I think one of the most important bits of this process for me has been learning to throw stuff away.
Yeah,
and I mean like deleting them off my hard drive, because otherwise I end up with, you go to search for something and there's just too many things, you know, it just, yeah, I get a billion hits and I can't deal with a billion hits. I need, you know, I need 20. I need to be able to find the one that I was looking for. So
if and you're just using Spotlight, you're just talking search.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just talking, you know, straight up. But you know, if I download it, and it's very easy, again, so I've got that whole process of emailing myself that document, I've got that down to one keystroke on my computer, and I've got a macro that fills in all the different fields, so I can easily, you know, email myself 30 articles. That's the easy part. But if I only read, you know, 5 or 6 of them, then keeping the other 20 is, you know, it's like digital hoarding or something. So, you know, if I come back to this in 6 months, I'm not going to be able to remember which one it is, and I'm not going to want to search through 20 of them, so I want to just get down to the ones that I actually use. And then it's a part of, again, this is fairly low tech, but it's come in handy, is in those folders, I'll create a little text file. And I'll, you know, and the text file will be the name of the PDF and like 1 or 2 sentences of, I kept this PDF because this was the article that said this. And I found out that one of the things that's really handy for is, you know, in Spotlight, you can go and you can tell it what kind of documents you want to look for. Well, because I've written all my notes in Markdown, which is like text files but different, they all end with .md. So if I'm searching for a .md file, it's probably something that I created. And if it's in this folder, it's definitely something that I've created. And that's a really easy way for me to be able to find my my notes to myself later on. You know, like I said, especially if I'm, I think I may have preached on this before, or, you know, I think there was something interesting on this sort of thing. I really want to get some of this into DevonThink. This is one of the programs I've owned for a long time and think is probably, would probably do a much better job of this than my brain would. But I just haven't been able to get myself to stick with it enough. And part of it is just, you know, I've got the scope now of thinking, okay, I've got 15 years worth of, you know, preaching memory. I want to get into this computer program. And really what I need to do is say, you know, let's take this Sunday and put that in there. And then, but again, I just wish I had started this 10 years ago, but.
I have DevonThink and I just scratched the surface of it, I'm sure, but you can't overload it because I've loaded all of my, you know, sermons I did back in my youth ministry days, you know, Bible studies I did and all that. So sometimes I pull up stuff that I did 12 years ago and think, I don't want to see this.
Yeah.
You know, because I'll just be searching for a certain term, you know, show me hospitality or whatever. And but it is an amazing, they've got some kind of mojo going on in their search engines, you know, where the way they index, because it definitely seems to, it doesn't seem like it just shows you terms. It definitely seems to know somehow based on context that these seem to be more valuable to what your search is than others. Even if you're just searching for one word, I can't explain why that is, but it's great.
Well, and that's one of the things I really like in Accordance too, is that it's got really good search operators for finding, you know, 2 words. And again, this is always a problem we run into when, you know, I think I've got a quote, but I, you know, was it this word or that word? And I know it was, you know, and it's got some really easy to use, you know, Boolean things where it's like, you know, I want to find either this word or that word within 5 words of this other word. And it's just, I think, you know, gosh, if preachers from 50 years ago could see us now and what we have, I think it would blow their minds to, you know, that what took them hours and hours we can do in seconds.
Yeah. For sure.
And again, in, you know, in extremely rural Ohio, I've got all these resources at my fingertips, which is truly amazing.
Yeah. So you're sitting, we're sitting Tuesday, Wednesday, who knows anymore, but you're starting to put all this together. You're starting to outline, And you said you really do the outline just with a text file.
Yep.
Because it's just really quick and easy.
Yep.
I assume it ends up being marked down or not necessarily.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, what it ends up being is, you know, usually a plain text file with a lot of asterisks. You know, every time I've got a new point, it's an asterisk, it's a bit of text, and then, you know, if there was an article that I got it from, it's probably got the file name to the article. Because, of course, you know, getting me the citation information for who wrote it and everything like that isn't nearly as useful to me as, you know, which PDF is this in, so I can just go back and find that later on.
Yeah. What do you do? What text editor do you use?
BB Edit.
BB Edit. Wow, look at you.
Yeah. Yeah. I paid like $120 for BB Edit. That's how long I've been using it. I think it's like 50 now or something like that.
Yeah.
I've
for sure.
got I've got like 40 text editors on the iPad. I can't get into any of them. I don't know what it is. I've got, you know.
So you do all this on a Mac? Like you?
Yes.
I assume it's living in Dropbox, but you don't often find yourself doing any sermon prep on an iPad.
You know, other than reading the articles, no, I don't. And part of me would like to, but the other thing I've got now, and you heard me talk about this in Mac Power User 2, I've got this ginormous screen. It's actually two monitors.
It's a double wide.
Yeah, it's a double wide or ultra wide, I think Dell calls it. And it's got some ridiculous name, but it's amazing to be able to see, you know, as great as my full size iPad is, on this thing, I can get a full page of, you know, web browser, Accordance, Logos, whatever, and another full page of, you know, word processing document or whatever. And being able to switch back and forth like that, it's just, you know, you can't get anywhere near that on an iPad.
No.
So, yes, I'm doing most of this on my Mac, except for the journal reading stuff.
Yeah. All right. And so as you're moving along and you're developing this outline, you're developing it, you're making notes, referencing back and forth. Is there a specific, let me truck away from that before I, because I was coming to what it looks like as you're finishing the outline. During the week, ideas certainly come to you.
Right.
You know, as you're mowing your 1.5 acres or whatever that might be. What does it look like for you to capture some of those ideas and have a way to pass those along to whatever sermon you're going to be working on this week? Or maybe, you know, capture them for long term.
Well, I've almost always got a field notes notebook in my back pocket.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, somebody's coming out of church and they're shaking my hand and they're telling me that somebody's in the hospital or they're going into the hospital or something like that. And I know I'm going to forget that by the time I walk back to my office. And fortunately, I've trained them so that they know it, so that they're not insulted when I reach down and, you know, write this thing down. And I always do the same thing, which is, I'm reaching for this, not that you can see it, but I've got the, you know, where the fold is, those two pages there. I write everything in there. And then when I fill up those two pages, I tear it out. I've always got the middle page. I've always got that spread. So
you always start in the middle.
Yeah. Presbyterian, isn't it? the only problem is sometimes it gets a little loose if I'm doing that. So, you know, I may do that for, you know, a while and then I may just like, you know, move on. Like some of these I keep, you know, keep near the phone if I'm on a phone conversation and I need to write stuff down. It's a lot easier to just write it down and then type it afterwards because I'm not a great typist. And I don't get distracted when I'm handwriting a note as I would when if I was typing and, you know, all of a sudden my computer beeps at me.
That's why as you're talking, I'm handwriting in a Moleskine. Partially so we don't have to hear the clipboard or my keyboard going click, 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 too. So,
but if I'm out somewhere, I mean, this is – I don't know what this is, but I often find that I get ideas that come to me when I'm driving.
Yeah.
And I very often am driving by myself and, you know, there's nobody there to, you know, take down a note or anything like that. But again, go back to send to Dropbox. I've got a contact in my address book that says that will just forward to my Dropbox. And so I can hit Siri. I've got a windshield mount for my iPhone. I use it as a GPS sometimes. So I can hit my little Siri button and say, email Dropbox. And it'll say, you know, what do you want the subject to be? And, you know, do that thing. And if I speak slowly enough and clearly enough.
Right. Siri hates me.
It's so great when it's good. And then the next day, it'll just be, you know, awful. I actually, last week when I was driving, I actually just made regular voice memos. Because I didn't have to worry about transcribing them. I'm like, I just want to, I can listen to this later and, you know, do my own manual transcription of them. But then once it does that, it emails me that file, and that file ends up on my computer. And again,
in the same dated folder.
In the same folder that's going on the same type of thing. So that's a really useful capture system. The only one I haven't figured out is when ideas come to me in the shower.
I knew you were going to go there because that's the same thing I have.
And you know, but of course the best ideas always come to me at about 12:15 on Sunday afternoon when I go, oh, you know what I should have said?
Right.
And by that, you know, by that time the waitress at the restaurant doesn't care. Ideas are coming, and I usually on a good week, if I'm early enough in my prep, there's enough other stuff that goes on. Usually like Wednesday, Thursday, because again, the office is closed on Friday. So secretary's trying to get the bulletin done and all this stuff that hopefully that stuff is just sort of sitting there and percolating a little bit.
Yeah.
And I usually will find myself coming back to, you know, an idea or, you know, one of them sort of bubbles to the top. And then, so hopefully by Thursday night, I had a Thursday night Bible study that was, that we were doing that I realized it, I had planned this totally wrong because Thursday night was the time that all the stuff was coming together in my head. And then I had this other Bible study I had to do, and I wasn't doing Bible study on my sermon type stuff. So, but anyway, Thursday night is usually when, you know, I find, you know, okay, I think I've got what I want to do. And, I start, it's not outlining and it's not drafting yet. It's sort of like, chunking or something where I've got like, okay, I want to say something about, I've got three or four lines about this. And probably 50% of these aren't going to be used. But what that gives me is on Friday then, when I do come, you know, and hopefully, you know, sit down and figure out what I'm actually going to say, hopefully then, you know, I've got a couple of those chunks that I can see, oh, wait, if I start with this and then I talk about this and, you know, I start to get some sort of an idea of what it's going to be on Sunday.
Yeah. So you're starting to finally put those together. And this is still in the text file.
Yeah, well, this is in the text file, but really we're also now getting to the point where I don't read a manuscript. I don't preach from a manuscript. And so I'm now getting to the point where I'm wanting to get this into my thought process of how does this stuff flow for me? How is this, you know, what's going to be the connection that goes from A to B to C? And this goes back to my speech class in, you know, first year of seminary, where, you know, we were basically taught, you know, how to Broadway actors and things like that memorize stuff. Well, you know, they start here and they do, you know, you know one part of your soliloquy when you're looking over to the left, and you know another part when you're looking straight ahead, and another part when you're, you know. And if I find that something I think is really important keeps falling out, I just take it out because obviously I'm trying. I think it's important, but subconsciously I apparently don't because I keep forgetting about it. And the easiest way to do this, I used to have a lot of resistance to doing this, but what I found the easiest way to do this is to put it into a file called Sermon Topic Ideas, and then I put it in there. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to lose it. It's here. It's in this file. And if I ever, you know, get some week where I just don't have anything to preach on, I can open up this file and, you know, have all these wonderful ideas. And of course I go back to them and I'm like, I don't know what this was because this isn't anything at all. There's nothing there, which is, you know, which is what some part of my brain was smart enough to know beforehand. But, it's so much easier to let it go when you know that, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm just putting you over here in this corner. It's okay. I still care about you. You're a wonderful idea.
I use this app, which I'm sure you're familiar with, called Drafts.
Oh, yes.
And so I come up with ideas all the time for everything. Like if it's something I want to talk about in a staff meeting, something about a sermon, something I just want to explore, something to go on my to-do list, it all goes in Drafts, as you know, and then I send it off. And sometime in the last week, I'm looking this up right now, I sometime in the last week I put ad mention of different versions in intro. I save that in drafts. I have no idea what it means. I'm trying to figure out, is it an intro for this blog series I'm about to write, or was it for a certain? I don't have any idea.
Yeah.
So I know you capture these things and you go back and you think, just what was I doing? What was I thinking about? So I'm glad to hear that I'm not the only one.
Yeah, I mean, filtering is really the thing. That's the hardest part to me, is that there's always something else to read. There's always something, you know, there's always another book, there's always another article, there's always another something.
Yeah.
And, you know, the next article could be, you know, the best one. And, you know, so you can just go on and on and on. But what I found was that, you know, when I was doing what came out to be for me too much of that, is, as my old preaching professor used to say, I ended up trying to preach a career in one Sunday, you know, where you've got 40 different points. And, you know, none of them go very deep, but, you know, you wanted to make all of them. For me, that was one of the reasons that I went to not using a manuscript, is because it was going to force me to simplify things.
Yeah.
Not simplify in a negative sense at all, you know, but hopefully more focused and more, you know, this is maybe the one idea of this sermon instead of the three or the seven or, you know, whatever it was. When I've got a 12-page outline, you know, I can preach on anything.
Maybe there's something to cut here.
But, you know, it makes total logical sense when I can follow this progression. But, of course, none of the people in the pews have my logical, you know, progression there.
So is there, other than that, I mean, is there a particular structure that you try to follow every week?
I really wish there was. I would really like some more structure and some more, you know, and there are weeks when it's, you know, that there have been weeks where I've looked at the, you know, draft of the bulletin on Wednesday and I go, oh, that's what I'm preaching on this week. Okay. Because, you know, she's taken it off the list that I was working on. But, you know, if Monday and Tuesday have blown up, then, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, the bulletin's still getting printed on Thursday, whether I'm ready for it or not. That's about as much, you know, routine as I have. Now, sometimes what's happened a couple of times is that there's something that's either happened in, you know, events of the week, or, you know, something I'm on, you know, Twitter and Tumblr. And if I've seen people talking about a particular, you know, topic that connects somehow to religion and life and things like that, that might come into it. I don't tend to do a lot of that because I really find that in 6 months, when I look back on it, how many of these are as important as they seemed right now. Most of the time, if there's something, you know, usually, unfortunately, really horrendous that's happened, I usually try to work it into the pastoral prayer or something like that, rather than the sermon. Because at that point, it might just be too raw for me to say anything about it, and I might just be angry rather than have something to preach about.
Yeah.
So that's the hardest for me, was the Newtown. Last year ago, December.
Yeah.
Because I had, that was just one of those weeks where I had the entire sermon was ready to go. And, you know, as the week went on, I was just like, you know, there's no way I can't talk about this. And I literally, on Saturday afternoon, I came into the church building and I sat in the sanctuary. And I just sat. And I just sat. And just waited and sat and thought and... you know, something completely different finally did come out of it. But it was, it was really painful. You know, that was just, because, you know, you're trying to make sense out of,
yeah,
you know, impossible, you know, pain and suffering and grief. And that is in the midst of being, you know, either, politicized or trivialized or any of these other things.
So quickly.
You know, it's that's the thing that I think bothers me the most about being online sometimes. It's, you know, 6,000 people were just killed in a, you know, natural disaster somewhere around the world, and people are rushing to see who can be the first one to come up with a funny joke about it. You know, I can still remember when the space shuttle Challenger broke up when I was a kid.
For sure.
And there were jokes, you know, there were, but it didn't feel like that was the first response, you know? And that sort of compression of it there gets really difficult. And this is a tangent a bit, I guess, but we were in Florida on September 11, 2001 happened, and that was a Tuesday.
Yep.
And we had our midweek Logos, not the Bible study program, but the Logos program on Wednesday. And, you know, we spent a lot of time trying to figure out, you know, what we're going to do, what we're going to talk about, things like that. And I was driving the church van, picking some kids up from school, and I picked up one of the middle schoolers. And one of the middle schoolers was already jaded by the fact that, you know, we were in Florida, you know, a long way from, you know, everything that happened. She said, everyone in my class has an uncle or a relative or something, you know. She's like, you know, everything attached to them. And it was like, I'm like 24 hours later, and, you know, she's already... Here's this middle schooler who's kind of over the whole thing not because she doesn't care about it, because she sees how people's reaction to it is more, how can I make this about me rather than something more honest. And again, it's just, I'll never forget that, because I was just, you know, we'd spend all this time trying to, you know, wrestle with this. And the kids were sort of burnt down on talking about something that had only happened 24 hours earlier. And that, I think that was the first time I realized what a different age Iowa, who was in my mid-20s, was compared to, you know, the world had changed so dramatically because everything was happening so much faster.
And I wonder if the culture that we live in right now, there's so many bloggers who are so specialized and so ready to talk about anything that blows up. You know, maybe there is something beneficial for the role of the pastor to not be the one, even though we feel like we're supposed to not be the ones who have the commentary on it this Sunday, but to be the ones who just give it up to God in prayer, like you talked about giving it to the pastoral prayer, because it does feel like, I mean, we just had all that in the last couple of weeks with all the world vision stuff that's broken and all that, and everybody's got to write about it and figure out, you know, who thinks what about it. And
and you know, I don't want to avoid it. I don't want, you know, it's sort of like, you know, if you know, you can go too far and, you know, something tragic happens and you're community on Saturday and, you know, you're preaching from the lectionary on something unrelated on Sunday. But, you know, that old thing about the Bible and the New York Times in your hand, there's got to be a balance there.
Right.
And to me, so often it feels like not only let me back up. One of the biggest difficulties is that whatever the world is wrestling with on Monday, they may not even remember on Sunday.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you also...
That's true, too.
You know, you're sort of like, you know, okay, well, I'm going to figure out whatever the big issue is on Saturday and, you know, have it ready for... and there isn't enough time for, you know, thought and reflection. And there's a great YouTube video Walter Brueggemann did. I want to say it's Working Preacher number 12, maybe, where he talks about... he knows rabbis who are complaining that Christian pastors have ruined the life of a rabbi, because rabbis, you know, traditionally have been theologians and scholars, and Christian pastors are managers and therapists and all these other things. He does a much better job. Definitely, I'll send the link, or if you can't.
Yeah, I'd love to find that, and I'll post it in the show notes.
Yeah, it's only a couple of minutes, but he talks about the fact that it's our responsibility, and it's a hard responsibility because it's not something that comes naturally for the congregation either, but it's our responsibility to, I think he says it this way, that, you know, we're supposed to be bringing a message from somewhere else. And we can't bring a message from somewhere else if we're so wrapped up in, you know, all the other stuff, the administration of, you know, the church and all, and that. And that's, again, you can go too far. You know, you can be, you know, off, you know, contemplating your navel type stuff and miss what's going on in your congregation. But I don't think that's as big of a concern for most pastors these days as the fact that, you know, we're getting pushed and pulled by the same thing that pushing and pulling the rest of our people.
Yeah. Well, let me work us towards a couple of particular questions I like to ask as we work towards wrapping up, because we're getting up there towards our we're about at an hour. We've been talking, which is okay, but you know, you mentioned the ancient Christian commentary. As far as resources or books go, you know, I recognize these might be ebooks, but are there some favorite series that you like to go to in terms of commentaries, or are there any books that you feel like have been especially helpful for forming you as a preacher? They might be preaching books, they might not.
Oh, those are good questions. Well, we actually, before we started the recording, I think we were talking about Craig Barnes' book, Pastor's yeah. Minor Poet. I found more recently that some of these books aren't about preaching as much as they are about living as a pastor or things like that. That's been a really good one for me. Mm-hmm. I've been rereading Eugene Peterson's, there are three or four of them, The Contemplative Pastor, The Smooth yeah. Stone for Pastoral Work, that's, you know, three or four in that series. And those have been really helpful for me to, again, he focuses on a lot of the, you know, what's the role of the pastor?
Yeah.
And for me, it's a lot more of a mindset. I don't have I kind of wish I did sometimes. I think this ties back to using the journal articles as a source. I don't have a book that I easily reference or things like that. I certainly, you know, I was trying to remember, you know, I was reading some, you know, journal article from an Orthodox, you know, magazine, and it was published in Russia or something like that. It was a really good article, but I'm like, you know, I never would have been able to come across this in a million years if I'd just been pulling this out on my own.
Yeah.
The New Interpretive Bible series is one that I did. That was some Logos. They had a sale on that one not too long ago. I've got a couple of those volumes on my shelf, but I bought that whole thing. They seem to have some really good stuff. If I was, you know, in a position where I had to go in and get into a particular thing, that would probably be a resource I would definitely look for. That's all that comes to mind at the moment. I'm sure I'll think of something in a half an hour and go, oh, yeah, I've been using this.
Like a sermon. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I am going to circle back because there was one other question. You talked about how you don't manuscript,
yes.
You know, and you build that outline. Do you take anything up with you to the pulpit?
I've got the reading printed out in 18 font because I want to be able to read it and not have to worry about losing my place. I format the readings so I can, you know, more easily, you know, read and scan so I'm not reading out of Bible pages. And then sometimes I will take that and put it on the music stand if they come out of the pulpit when I preach, but if I want to refer to the scripture reading. But other than that, nope. I think that whatever comes out is what was supposed to come out. If I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, not just on Sunday, but the rest of the week.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of memorized sermons, and one of my theories is if my outline's not so simple for me to remember it, nobody else is going to.
Yes.
You know, so that I want to, like you talked about, breaking it down. But I'm not yet at a point where I can feel like I can go up there with nothing. Plus, it's just a chance to hold my iPad that I like. I like my iPad. It's another opportunity to hang out with it. So,
I had an app a while ago that did like teleprompting.
Yeah.
But I got off on an anecdote, and then the teleprompter just kept on going because.
Oops.
Yeah. There was a book I read several years ago about, I think it's just called Preaching Without Notes.
Yeah.
And he gives you a day-by-day outline of what you do during the course of a week to get ready to preach a sermon without any notes. And as much as anything, that's probably what my system is based on, although I'm sure he'd be horrified if he had heard me describe it because of Paul. But I'm sure I've mangled it compared to what he was, you know. His vision was much higher than mine, but that was a very good book. I'm looking on my shelf now to see if I can find it, but I'll see if I can email you the link for that. But I'm pretty sure it was Preaching Without Notes was the – but and it, I mean, this is a – you know, you've got a – you know, you've sort of landed in a church and you've never done this on a regular basis and you want to know what to do on Monday and what to do on Tuesday. He walks you right through it in that book.
Yeah. Well, TJ, this has been fun. It has been. We didn't get as nerdy as I anticipated we might.
Yeah,
I think it's still useful for people. So
I hope so.
But talk a little bit about the other places. I mean, we already talked about your podcast, but
yes.
where can people find you in the digital world?
Oh gosh, I've got a. If I have any addictions, it's probably buying domain names. So I've got a few too many of them, and I've been trying to let some of them go, and it's really, really painful. But they can find me, let's see, on Twitter is the easiest way if you're on there, at TJ Luoma. And I always tell people L-U-O-M-A, because it's not Lou as in Lewis, but L-U-O-M-A. You can find me at rhymeswithdiploma.com. I just started something, I'm still getting it off the ground, called Reforming Faith. And that's a great play on words that I'm guessing a lot of your folks will pick up on.
That's a website.
That's a website, reformingfaith.com. Okay. And that's where I'm trying to focus some of my longer articles, that things that I want to talk about that wouldn't fit into a sermon very well, that, you know, I think would work better as something that I can, you know, again, going back to that, you know, you have to simplify things to a certain extent when you're not using a manuscript. And I think some things are just better read than heard even. So I've been trying to post there. That's a very low, low frequency, because it is intentionally trying to be very, each one of these is meant to be something that I've chewed on, and I hope that other people will chew on as well. So that's there. You can find me, if you want to find more nerdy stuff, you can find me at the unofficial Apple weblog, which is TUAW.com. Mm-hmm.
And I'll link, how often do you write there?
I've got a great thing going there. Mike Rose, one of the lead editors, he and I got to know each other on Twitter a couple of years ago, and at that point they were a little more focused on, you know, sort of breaking news and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, I've got a full-time daytime job. I can't be doing all this stuff. And he said, no. He's like, you know those things that you're writing over on this little, on my own little website that no one ever saw except him, or a couple other people who followed me on Twitter, you know, where you've had something that just, you know, something's tripped you up and then you figured out how to fix it. He's like, when, next time you get one of those, just write it for us.
Nice.
So there'll be some weeks when I write like three things, and then there'll be like at the end of the month, I'll go to tally up. I'm like, oh, I guess I didn't write anything this month. But if you go to, you can actually get, each one of us has our own RSS feed, or you can subscribe to the whole feed for the whole site. So, if people want to do something like that,
I imagine there's an author page I can link to.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. As a matter of fact, if you just go to, luo.ma, /TUAW, that'll take you.
Another one of my
domains. That's actually my like personal shortener. I put my own like bit.ly or whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's Morocco, I think, is MA. But I thought that was just too perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've looked for those kind of. I have a friend whose name is John, and he has jo.hn.
Wow.
But I've not had any luck with any of my names doing variations like that.
Well, the problem with a lot of these is, you know, that they're, if the country ever decides, like, I think actually, like, the LY domain decided, like, you know, if you don't live in Libya or whatever, you can't have one of their domains. But I've always thought, you know, if I have to go live in Morocco, well, you know.
That wouldn't be so bad.
Yeah, really, yeah. It's,
move from a lake to the Mediterranean, I guess.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Right, not in Morocco. Well, TJ, thanks so much. Oh, you know, what was that? You know, the one other one. What is there a website for your church? Somebody wants to listen to one of your memorized sermons.
Oh, yeah. The church website is actually an abomination at the moment. We lost our whole thing. It was on a server. It's a long story. But anyway, I've been trying to get it back up and running for a while. I do have, if you go into iTunes, there is a feed that I need to get back up on. Or if find me and nag me, and I'll because I do. I've got them, but they're all recorded, and they're actually all sitting on a website. I just need to get back on the feed thing. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Enjoyed
it. And talk about, you know, how we can push the bits around for the Bible. Oh, my gosh, that was horrible. That will never be uttered again. That will not be a tagline or anything like that.
Pushing Bible bits for Jesus.
There you go, yeah. Well, thanks a lot, TJ. It's been good to have you.
Thank you.